Hello everyone and welcome to the EdTech Podcast. My name is Sophie Bailey and this is the podcast which aims to improve the dialogue between Ed and Tech for better innovation through storytelling. How are you doing today? If you're enjoying the EdTech Podcast and interested in how you can support our mission, we're now booking in sponsors for the first quarter of 2018. Why not join past ad sponsors from Kano to Primo Toys, Microsoft to the Japan Prize to the Mikkelsen 20mm Foundation? Contact us to find out more at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. This week, we're going total stereo surround sound by releasing two episodes of the EdTech Podcast. First up, in this episode, I'm in conversation with Heidi Fraser-Krause, Director of Information Services at the University of York. This is our second of three recordings from Ovum's Future EdTech event, focused on innovation in the higher education sector. Heidi recently won CIO of the Year at Computing's Women in IT Excellence Awards, so listen in carefully to this episode, which covers everything from change management techniques to working in the cloud to resource recommendations to keeping motivated working in education and tech. Alongside this one from Heidi, you can also check out the first of our Pearson Future Tech for Education series on the four foci of EdTech technologies: mixed reality, data science or AI, biosyncing and human-machine relations, and how these affect education, teaching and learning. That episode is available on the EdTech Podcast feed at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio or the EdTech Podcast website. A big shout out to Ed Academy, Qatar Foundation International and Class Central for sponsoring this week's episode. A quick message from them now, and don't forget, if you're enjoying the podcast, you can drop us a review on iTunes where you can also rate the show. This week's episode is brought to you by Ed Academy. Up until now, the size of your marketing budget, not the quality of your product, has been a key factor in deciding whether or not you make it into schools. Ed Academy, the new interactive education marketing platform, wants to level that playing field. Developed by their expert team with over 11 years education marketing experience, Ed Academy gives you all the tools and expertise you need in order to get your product out there and in front of teachers. You'll learn the tricks of the trade through their interactive online marketing and sales lessons, as well as industry expert interviews, plus direct one-to-one access to their expert marketing team to ensure your success. Say goodbye to big marketing budgets. Visit edacademy.co and join the education marketing revolution. Arabic is the official language of more than 27 countries, and there are more than 400 million speakers of the language worldwide. Yet in the US, for example, less than 1% of students study Arabic. Studies have shown that those who speak a second language not only earn more, but are in higher level positions than their monolingual counterparts. And there's no shortage of studies that point to the benefits of students at the K-12 level learning a new language. The National Research Council in 2007 found that children who study a foreign language show greater cognitive development in areas such as mental flexibility, creativity, and higher order thinking skills. Qatar Foundation International inspires meaningful connections to the Arab world by creating a global community of diverse learners and educators, connecting them through effective and collaborative learning environments inside and outside the classroom. Qatar Foundation International builds bridges across cultures by increasing the number of K-12 students in the Americas and the United Kingdom with a good knowledge and understanding of Arabic language and culture, by increasing the number and quality of Arabic programs in state and public charter schools in the United States and other countries. Qatar Foundation International supports the teaching of the Arabic language through grant giving and programming activities, while increasing and professionalizing the supply of highly qualified teachers of Arabic, thus raising the visibility of a growing profession through grants, professional development, and free online resources. For more information on free teaching materials and available grants, please go to qfi.org and ispeakarabic.com. And now, a quick message from our friends at Class Central. It's been more than half a decade since free online courses from Stanford kicked off the modern MOOC, or Massive Online Open Courses, movement. Since then, more than 700 universities around the world have launched MOOCs, and more than 60 million people have taken at least one course. Class Central has been keeping track of the MOOC space right from the beginning. Over 10 million learners have used Class Central to find and review online courses. As the number one search engine for online courses, Class Central provides a comprehensive listing of more than 8,000 MOOCs. Class Central's MOOC Report blog contains the most comprehensive coverage of the industry, including a recent listing of the top 50 MOOCs of all time. To find out what's up, down, new, or just slightly left field in the world of online courses, head to www.class-central.com/report. Now, without further delay, here's episode 91 with Heidi Fraser-Krause, Director of Information Services at the University of York. I'm here with Heidi Fraser-Krause, who's Director of Information Services at the University of York. So welcome, Heidi.
Hello.
So what were you speaking about yesterday at Future EdTech?
So I was talking about the institutions, higher education institutions, use of cloud services.
Okay.
So I did a survey of, and I got about a response rate of half the universities in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah, so a very good response rate and very interesting things. Not unpredictable, but interesting findings.
And so can you run through some of the highlights?
Sure. So the biggest take home for me was that higher education institutions are moving to the cloud, and that pace is really accelerated. If I think back 5 years, so I've been in the sector a while, there was not a lot happening. Now, so in the survey I did, 96% of institutions who responded had moved something, and sometimes quite large amounts of their estate, out to things like software as a service or file sync and share.
Mm.
And that just was not the case a few years ago. So the pace of change is increasing.
And what do you see as the catalyst for that acceleration, if that's even a sentence?
Cloudification, as I've just been hearing about. So I think the availability. So there's a real correlation. If there's software that's available on a cloud platform,
okay, yeah,
people will move to it. So what we're not seeing is timetabling systems, for example, been available as software as a service.
Yeah.
Student record systems not available as software as a service. But the biggest areas were email, so things like Google Suite, G Suite, or Office 365. 83% of the people who'd moved had moved their email out to that, or collaboration suite.
Yeah, and then everything starts to go with it. So
virtual learning environments, big piece there. And then, yeah, your business system.
So is that driven also by a cost factoring? So, you know, lowering costs at a time of pressure on that? Because certainly if I think about K-12, it's a similar story. And I think previously the biggest concerns have been around privacy and data, but at the same time, you've got this budgetary pressure. And so I think the kind of move to the cloud, that's been a big factor.
So interestingly, again, the conversation used to be about saving money, and I'm sure there is a piece around saving money. But again, I asked people what their drivers were, what they were looking for, and cost was not the biggest one. The biggest one was around flexibility and agility and getting new things, and also around the pace of change. So if you're going with a system which is being agilely developed, you're getting much better. You know, the pace of your development is quicker if you've got an on-prem service.
Yeah.
And the management of that. And also a piece around skills in the institutions themselves. Often they haven't got the skill set to do some of these things. It was really interesting looking at this data, thinking what is driving people, and that cost was not it.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting because you mentioned about pace, but, you know, it strikes me sometimes that the pace of change is a bit pedestrian. That's kind of just an observation, but it would be interesting to see if more people can, you know, have systems that make them more agile, whether the culture will follow.
Well, I have to say, so in York, if I can talk specifically about York for now, we moved to, well, Google Apps for Education, as it was called, in 2011, and we were very brave and we did everything. So calendars, docs, sheets, email, you name it, we switched everything on. And that was a big risk. The University of York had traditionally been quite conservative in what it did. And what we've seen is an adoption of things and a change in practice. It didn't happen overnight, but over the years, we've seen more and more people embrace these technologies and get used to the pace of change And that's marvellous. That's exactly what we're looking for.
So do you think that that's what's needed sometimes is just, you know, making an executive decision, getting on with it, and there will always be people that it takes longer to get familiar with the services, but if you've then got all of your colleagues doing it, suddenly like a bit of an impetus to change your mindset?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fair to say, because we survey our customers, both academic staff and students, that not everybody is happy. But I think mm-hmm. you sort of accept that you never will be. Mm-hmm. Some of these things are very personal choices. But I think the majority of people have now moved in the direction of accepting this, not everybody. And yes, I think being brave, taking executive decisions, saying, actually, we think this is the right thing to do. And obviously then providing support to mm-hmm. people after that is good. I mean, you can. There was a quote yesterday about the cost of the status quo. And I think that that's a really important point to make. You know, doing nothing, you fall further behind. Mm-hmm. And the step you then have to climb gets higher and higher. So, yeah, I really do think that. And technology is a very weird thing. People almost have religious views and beliefs over it.
Very true. No, it's funny. And well, it's a bit like politics. Then you get stuck in your camp and you don't really want to move. And it's not easy to kind of admit sometimes. We're talking about customers, academic students. I miss the student panel. So could you relay a little bit about what they had to say as well?
So very interestingly, so the first thing they said was around consistency. So the idea that there were tools available in the organisation, for example, virtual learning environments, but the way they were used or not used was totally inconsistent across a university. So, you know, some areas might embrace it with, you know, open arms, and others were not embracing it. And for a student, that inconsistency was a problem. Mm. They also talked about the fact that in exams, technology seemed to be non-existent.
I just saw that quote. I think it was amazing. So can you tell us about that?
Computer science student talking about the fact that in their exam, they were handwriting code. And how mad was that? In that this just didn't mirror the real world at all.
Yeah.
Exams is a really interesting piece of how you do that at scale. I think that's something that we're all struggling with. I actually went to see the University of Utrecht earlier this year. They've done a big piece of work around putting Chromebooks everywhere. So to lower their sort of infrastructure need to do this. And I know other universities are doing all sorts of other solutions around exams, some doing it on bring your own device, which I thought was another interesting one. How do you ensure you're not cheating? Yeah.
But it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think the chap from Ovum opened this morning sort of saying, or was it from Ecole 42, about collaboration, and that we know it's a skill that we have to develop in our students, but in university it's still quite siloed and it's not really, it's called cheating.
collaborating with somebody and talking to them. Well, the other thing I think, one of the points the student made was around collaboration with the academic staff. They were saying, you know, we're not at school anymore. We want to be able to engage with you. And I've definitely seen instances where academic staff engaging with students over a document, for example, sharing it. You know, here's a Google Doc or whatever it might be, a document in Office 365 Word document, and people actually co-creating this sort of thing. So the student puts something out, the academic comments back. And I think we should be doing more of these things. And just to return to the piece around academics and consistency, there is a big issue, and I see it in my institution, and I know it exists in others, around the skills of academic staff, around, you know, embracing digital. Lots of people have just never had the opportunity to update and upgrade their skills. They know how to do something in one way, and there hasn't really been the support in institutions to upskill people and support them through that, because there's almost this view that the content, you know, you're a great lecturer, how you deliver, you know, it's up to you almost. And I think we need to address that. We need to help people.
And is that what the TEL piece is all about?
Yeah, technology enhanced learning. So again, technology enhanced learning has been around for a long time. And in some areas it's embraced, but not in others. And I think coming back to virtual learning environments, they are often just repositories of PowerPoint slides. Because how else do you do it? If you are, you know, don't have the time to develop or have never been helped and supported to learn a new way of doing technology, but also teaching almost. Mm-hmm. We need to have a look at this whole piece. And there is these agendas coming with flipped classroom, etc. But it's not adopted everywhere. And I understand why not. I'm married to an academic. You know, it's hard to renew all of your...
And every year you don't do it, you're kind of one step more estranged from your students almost.
Correct. So you get older. Their skills get better. The gap between you almost gets, well, does get wider.
Yeah, yeah. How can we prevent the NHS ransomware incident happening in higher education?
Well, it didn't happen in higher education.
No.
So, I mean, I think what the universities did, they did well. So we, as far as I'm aware, no UK higher education institution was affected by the WannaCry ransomware stuff.
And do you think they're in a position that it won't happen in the future?
So I think lots of universities do have good protocols, good methodologies for keeping things up to date. I think we've got a good network as well, run by JISC, Janet, and that I think was part of why we weren't affected.
Yeah.
So there's a whole raft
students
of
don't
things.
Have any money as well, so that's the biggie.
But institutions do.
Well, you've got lots of interesting data as well. So what do you use for your tech backbone and what do your students want?
Our tech backbone.
I suppose that's Janet, really, isn't it?
Yeah, so for our networking, our all of the networking infrastructure sort of backbone level is provided by Janet. And I don't think there are many complaints about that
in
terms of its reliability, in terms of the bandwidth. Obviously, it needs to keep up the amounts of data that universities ship around, that students consume.
Get off YouTube.
Well, YouTube, Netflix.
Yeah.
All sorts of things like that. Maybe the BBC site too.
A bit
of Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of these things are for educational purposes.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't.
Yeah. So what's your biggest priority and challenge right now in your own role?
Okay, so I think using technology to support the business of teaching, learning and research is the real challenge. Universities' central IT teams have tended to be focused on business systems, so your HR system, your student record system, etc., and not focused on supporting teaching, learning and research. There's a mindset piece in there. There's also getting those partnership arrangements with academics in the departments.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you have a kind of template that you can share with other people? Like, I'm just thinking for other projects, sometimes it's about setting up a network of champions type thing and then spreading those ideas in that way. I don't know if you have a...
So I think the way I started to do this in York was to build credibility of the central IT team. So actually going out and speaking to people and understanding what it was they wanted. And when they said something that was a bit threatening or challenging or different, not saying no, actually thinking, how could we do that? Mm. How could we address that? So, for example, we used to charge for all of our storage, if you wanted a network point, all sorts of things like that. And academic departments and academics just were not interested in that. And so they went off and did their own things. So building those partnerships. So credibility, I think, is the key one. Getting out there and actually delivering things that people want and really removing barriers. So it's not another form to fill in. You know, we'll do that for you. Why would you want to be patching those systems, running those things, buying those things? You know, I'll do it and I won't charge you for it. I will, you know, I'm your business partner. I'll deliver it. Give me the hassle. And that's worked extremely well. We've now got, as a central IT team, a very good reputation. People actually come to us now and tell us that they're going to do things and ask us for help and assistance. And that's almost half the battle won. In the past, the assumption was the answer would be no, regardless of the question. So people just never came.
Yeah.
And it's breaking down those barriers, opening up, making central IT much more porous. So, for example, there are lots of people working in the academic departments supporting IT in the local areas. We've opened up to them. You know, we used to sort of say, oh, no, we don't want to engage with those people. And my argument was they're all employees of the institution and they're all supporting the business.
Yeah.
So just becoming more semi-permeable and porous, sharing, working in partnership. And these all sound totally straightforward and common sense things to do. But it's not as straightforward as that. And it takes quite a lot of time to build those relationships.
And how did you get into the role and what did you do previously?
So in my current life, I worked at the University of St Andrews before in a similar sort of role. So responsible for business change projects and technology. Moved to York 5 years ago, responsible for IT. But I'm now also responsible for the library services and the archive in York.
Which interestingly is quite often where loads of really cool innovation comes
Absolutely.
Out of the library services. Yeah.
So there's been lots and lots of partnership working. And the other area that's been really a big surprise and a real sense of joy actually is our archives. So York's got very nice nice, that sounds an awful word, excellent yeah. archives that cover a very long space of time back to 1160 something. And we've been working with the archives on digitization of things and supporting technology to make the archives more available.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. That's you know, this real cool. partnership. And again, supporting research. So sort of digital humanities, digital scholarship. There's a point in the middle where all those things overlap. And that's very exciting to me.
One question I always ask everyone is if there are any books, resources, people that have kind of helped shape how you think. And so it doesn't necessarily need to be something to do with your job, but perhaps something that you continue to return to. And it doesn't have to be, it could be a novel, it could be someone you follow on Twitter, anything.
So I read a couple of books. So I read a book, I read Steve Jobs's biography.
Mm-hmm. The Walter Isaacson yeah. one.
And that. That really got me, the way he had this vision and the way he often failed and kept going, but the way he just sort of felt it, that this was the right thing to do. So that's been very influential. I have to say, I didn't particularly like Steve Jobs.
No, he's not a very likable person, but you see that because it's almost because of that, that he has this like tunnel vision, that he gets so much stuff done, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's someone you particularly want to hang around with.
Yeah, so, and then I also read a book about Google called In the Plex.
Okay.
But that, again, was very interesting about how a technology company has developed and, again, about the sort of vision, the willingness to be bold and do things slightly differently. And then I think the last one is a book called Switch,
okay.
which is about change. But that, again, was about examples of how to get change to happen by doing small, different things. And I found that I try and think about that. How could I approach this problem differently? What am I missing? And just thinking of the successes where there are successes and building on those and explaining them to people. So those are some of the books that I've read
Excellent.
And enjoyed.
And so if people want to reach out to you, how can they contact you? Are you on Twitter?
So I'm on Twitter. I'm at Heidi Fraz Krause.
Okay, excellent. Easy peasy.
Yeah.
One final question. So I'm sure you get contacted by tech companies all the time because of your role as well. So what's your message to the tech companies out there who are keen to meet you?
So understand my business. So loads of people contact me not understanding the problems I'm trying to solve. And I just delete them. I mean, lots of cold calling, lots and lots of cold calling. So, and I know it's hard for tech companies to build a relationship. They're all trying to do that. But it really is about understanding my business and offering me things that I'm actually looking for, not what they want to sell me.
Mm.
That would be my message.
Good message to end on. So Heidi, thank you very much. That's the end of this week's episode. Thanks to Angela Rose Sullivan from the US, who posted a new review on iTunes this week. She said, "I love the EdTech podcast. It's a fabulous resource that keeps all of us in the know. Sophie presents balanced views on issues that challenge all of us in EdTech and seeks input from industry experts across the globe. It's important to know what's happening outside of your country and region, and the EdTech podcast is a great tool for enabling this." Thanks, Angela. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to find out about our upcoming meetup drinks, cool jobs currently circulating, and other announcements. For full references, show notes, and book recommendations, go to theedtechpodcast.com. And for competitions and more, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/podcastedtech. If photos are more your thing, we're also on Instagram. I love to hear your feedback, so do please tweet, comment, or send a voicemail to us. Next week, we return with the Director of Research and Analysis from Oven Technology, Nicole Engelbert, who brings us analysis on trends in technology in higher education, plus the second of our Pearson Future Tech for Education series on artificial intelligence. What has it got to do with me and my students? See ya!